facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A fantastic Friday to you. Welcome to the show. Made it through another week. We're going to get you all set up for the weekend on The Cale Clark Show. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. Once again, that toll-free line, 1-888-914-9149. Or you can hit me up on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We have a show account, too, at Cale Clark Show. And email, cale@relevantradio.com. And it's kind of interesting that in his Advent inspiration that you just heard right now, Father Rocky referenced the three wise men or the three magi that went to visit our Lord, because there was a very interesting news story that I'm sure you at least caught. A lot of outlets were reporting this at some point this week, that there's going to be a very fascinating phenomenon that's going to happen in the night sky coming up on December the 21st. And I believe that is the winter solstice, if I'm not mistaken. Jupiter and Saturn are going to put on a quote-unquote Christmas star show. How about that? And this happens, by the way, once about every 20 years, about every 19.8 years. And there's going to be a conjunction involving these two great planets of Jupiter and Saturn, who are known as the two gas giants of the universe. I'm also known as a gas giant for other reasons, but we're not going to get into that. And what's going to happen is that on December the 21st, Jupiter and Saturn are going to seem to merge in the night sky in the west. And it's going to be a spectacular sight. And this happens every 20 years, but they're not going to be this close. They haven't been this close in nearly eight centuries, in the 1200s. Can you believe this? 1221 was the last time that they're going to be this close. And this is going to occur, obviously, near Christmas Day on December the 25th, in case you didn't know. But you know that, of course. So this has given rise to a lot of talk about the Star of Bethlehem that the Gospel of Matthew describes as leading the Magi. And hopefully that is the correct pronunciation of Magi. We were arguing about this before the show. I could say Magi, but then someone will email me saying, no, it's Magi. And if I say Magi, someone will say, no, it's Magi. But I'm going to go with Magi for today. And in this, so a lot of people said, you know, is this what happened the first Christmas, this conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn? Well, the Catholic News Service interviewed Jesuit brother Guy Consolmagno, and we've talked about him before because he's the director of the Vatican Observatory. Remember, a few weeks back, we talked about this big news story that there might be life on Venus. I'm your Venus, I'm your fire, it's your desire. That's a little bit Bananarama for you. You remember that one, or maybe you tried to forget it, my bad singing there. But anyways, he mentions Jesuit brother Guy Consolmagno, who directs the Vatican Observatory. He said, you know, it's really a very minor part of the infancy narrative, you know, this idea of the star. And he says, in his view, it's so unimportant that Luke doesn't even mention it. It is true. Luke doesn't mention that in his infancy narrative regarding the birth of Christ. And of course, there really are only two Gospels with an infancy narrative, Matthew and Luke. Mark doesn't have one. John doesn't have one. John actually goes back to the very, very beginning of all creation. Beyond that, even, you know, before anything was created, there was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So that's John chapter 1. But it's what the star represents, though, according to Brother Consolmagno of the Vatican Observatory, that what the star represents is really the big story here. And believe it or not, he says that there are over 400 books referencing the Star of Bethlehem. If you search for that title, the Star of Bethlehem, there are over 400 book titles involving the Star of Bethlehem. I'm surprised there are that many, but he says to me, and I quote, "To me, asking what was the star is a lot of fun, but it's not particularly significant, either astronomically or theologically. Nothing is really at stake if it turns out to be this explanation or that explanation," end of quote. Now, he's certainly right about that. You know, a lot of people want to say it was a comet. Some people want to say it was a conjunction of planets, like we just talked about a moment ago. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what it was. What matters is the significance of Christ. Father James Krasinski, who's the pastor of St. Olaf Parish in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, And of course, that doesn't seem like it's too far from the studios of Relevant Radio in Green Bay. Father James Krasinski of St. Olaf's Parish. I don't know anything about St. Olaf. I do know a lot about Olaf from Frozen, though, because my daughter, who's 4 years old, makes me watch it 3 times a week. Perhaps you parents out there can relate. So I don't know much about St. Olaf, but I do know about Olaf the Snowman. Anyway, so Pastor James Krasinski, who's an amateur astronomer, by the way, on the side, he says this, and I quote, "We need to remember that the Star of Bethlehem could have had different meanings for the people that Matthew was writing to. Was it a supernatural event? Was it an event to signal somehow, some way that there was something that was happening in the world, signaling the birth of a king that was not just a human being, but there was something different about this king," end of quote. And he actually suggests that Matthew may have been using this image of the star to link with what it says in the book of the prophet Isaiah, this great light bringing people out of darkness. And of course, that's a reference to Isaiah chapter 9, where it says that in the latter time, he will make glorious the way of the sea, the land beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the nations, or Galilee of the Gentiles. It's hard to see how this isn't a prophecy about Christ in Isaiah chapter 9. And of course, it's just a beautiful chapter. But the main verse that everybody knows from Isaiah 9 is verse 6, where it says, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder. And his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and of peace there will be no end. Upon the throne of David and over his kingdom to establish it, and to uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time forth and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this." So this idea, Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Obviously the church has always applied Isaiah 9:6 to Christ and his arrival on the scene in Bethlehem. So that's very true. I mean, it may simply be a literary device, but I'm not so sure about that. I'm not so sure about that. That it wasn't an actual astronomical phenomenon that was taking place at the time. At any rate, we can ask the question, you know, what was it like when Christ was born? And Father Krasinski says, to me, this is an opportunity for people to get out, you know, that night on December the 21st, see this conjunction of planets, meditate on what it might have been like the night that Christ was born. What does the birth of Christ mean to me? And we need to, as Brother Consul Manio says, go outside, observe the beauty of creation, realize that God is greater than any planetary dance, especially as the world continues to battle the coronavirus down below and all kinds of social ills that we're experiencing. So read some more about that. And if you're really interested in this, Brother Consul Manio is actually going to have an online presentation about this that you can get in on this, and it costs 10 euros, which is $12.25 in American dollars. And if you want to register for this, you can go to skyatnightmagazine.com/virtual lecture to see Brother Consul Manio and his discussion of this. But I want to talk about the Bible's explanation of this, because the Word of God gives us a lot of insight into what happened that first Christmas. And I want to get into some of the historical stuff that's going on here under the surface. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Let's look at Matthew chapter 2, which mentions the star. And it says this, "In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, asking, 'Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage.' When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, and you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go to pay him homage. When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. You can give us a call, 1-888-914-9149. Once again, 1-888-914-9149. Talking about this interplanetary conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn that's going to happen on December the 21st. Is this the kind of thing that the Magi saw in the sky? Is this the phenomenon that they noted that drew them eventually to meet the infant Christ? And by the way, this happens after Christmas. This is more the Epiphany. So Jesus is some months old at this point as an infant. And when did this take place? Well, Matthew says it took place in the time of King Herod. Now, a few days ago on the program, we talked about when Jesus was actually born. We answered a listener question, and he wasn't born in the year 0 AD, right? The monks who came up with our present solar calendar got things off a little, you know, ever so slightly, because Herod, of course, is still alive when Jesus was born, Herod the Great, and he died in the year 4 BC. So in all likelihood, this probably happened around the year 5 BC. So think about that. You know, Jesus might be a little bit older than we think when he goes to the cross. He may have been 35 if he died in the year AD 30, or even as old as 38 if he died in the year 33. Interesting thought. And King Herod, of course, was quite the insane character. And I'll tell you a little bit more about his craziness as we go on here. And by the way, these Greek, as they're known in Greek, magi, they could be magicians. Some people think they're magicians, but not in the sense of an illusionist, somebody like, you know, David Blaine. Remember his ascension trick? No, not like that. They're probably astronomers, and they may have come from Chaldea, you know, biblical Babylon, if you will. They might have even been pagan priests. In fact, ancient writers said that there were often people like this who would observe and try to understand strange phenomena that occurred in the heavens. The Chaldeans or the Babylonians were very famous in antiquity for their knowledge of what was called magic and astrology at the time. Now, what's interesting too, the gifts that they bring to the infant Christ is exactly what it says is given to King Solomon in Psalm 72. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. It's like the and so Matthew sees this as a fulfillment of an Old Testament type where Solomon, the son of David, the king, gets tribute from all the nations. We see Jesus, who is also a son of David, according to Matthew, getting tribute from the kings of the earth. They may have been known and thought to be kings. They may have been kings themselves, or they may have been representatives of kings. We're not quite sure. But Matthew draws out the office there. Anyways, one of the things that they do when they see this phenomenon, again, we're not quite sure what this is. We'll talk about this in just a minute. They inquire where they might find this recently born King of the Jews. Now, King of the Jews, this is where Herod's ears really perked up. And he said, what? Because Herod called himself King of the Jews. He himself was not Jewish. He was actually an Edomite by heritage, but he was appointed as ruler over the Jews by the Roman Senate in the year 40 BC. And who recommended him for this job? Herod's good buddy, Mark Antony. Mark Antony. Yeah, you know his music, Mark Antony, the great salsa singer. No, that's a different guy. That's Mark Anthony. Nonetheless, I need to know a little bit more about this. So I'm going to talk to you about it. Anyways, Josephus, the great Jewish historian, calls Herod regularly the King of the Jews. It happens all throughout his writings about him. So this is why it's natural for the visiting magi to say, hey, you know, they figure it's going to be Herod's successor. you know, maybe one of his sons or something like that. They didn't think anything of it, you know, like, hey. So Herod is himself not well at this point. He is quite aged. He's not doing well physically. And his own succession plan was a little bit chaotic. It was a little bit up in the air. So he is not happy about this at all. And by the way, Herod was a big, big party pooper. He had already arranged, and this is how violent this man was, he had a plan in place that the moment that he died, and he knew that the people that he was ruling over hated him, he had this plan in place that as soon as he died, a number of very prominent citizens would be slaughtered at that very moment. Why did he want to do this? To guarantee that the day of his death would not be celebrated by anyone. So he wanted to create this big national tragedy, have all these leading figures killed. Oh my goodness, what a, I don't even want to say it. I don't even want to say it, but you can imagine what I think of this guy. He was a bad dude, to say the least, to say the least. So anyways, the Magi explain, they have seen this star at its rising. And in antiquity, if you read a lot of ancient biographies, the births and deaths of great figures in history were often, you know, linked with the appearance of supernatural phenomena in the heavens, such as Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, and many other people. And by the way, the Magi might have known, they might have even been readers of the Old Testament books. In the book of Numbers, there's a very famous messianic prophecy, Numbers 24, verse 17, and Jews, you know, for centuries looked to this as a sign of the coming Messiah. And here's what Balaam said in Numbers 24, 17. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel. It shall crush the borderlands of Moab. So this idea of a scepter and a star arising out of Israel. So they may have known this passage very well. And they might have said, you know what? I think this is what's happening now. We better follow this star wherever it may lead. And in actuality, in the synagogues of the day, when the Bible is translated into Aramaic for the synagogue, it's even more clear that it's about the Messiah. Because the Aramaic translation of Numbers 24:17 says, I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. When the strong king from the house of Jacob shall rule, and the Messiah and the strong rod from Israel shall be anointed. It doesn't even call him the star, it just calls him the Messiah in the Aramaic paraphrase. That's really interesting. So what are the possible celestial phenomena that were going on at that first Christmas that might have been that star that led the Magi to seek Jesus? Well, there was an alignment of Jupiter and Saturn, just like we're going to have here on December the 21st in 2020. An alignment of these two planets actually happened in the year 7 BC. I don't know if you know that, but that would have created what, again, look to the, you know, the human eye and maybe a not so powerful telescope as a star of unusual brightness. There was also an alignment of the planets Venus. I'm your Venus. I'm your okay. There was an alignment of Venus and Saturn in the year 3 BC. That might have been it too. We don't really know what it was, to be honest, but it could have been those things. There was also a couple other configurations and planetary alignments that happened in the year 2 BC and 3 BC that could have also been candidates for what this star really was. You know what also is interesting too? And we're going to talk about this after the break. When Matthew was writing his gospel, the stars were actually thought to be living beings. Fascinating. We're going to be right back on the Cale Clark Show. If you want to chat about this, give me a call, 1-888-914-9149. It's fascinating. Be right back. The Relevant Radio Studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans is available at relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the show. We were talking about a big news story this week that on December the 21st, coming up, there's going to be a conjunction of the planets Saturn and Jupiter, and it's going to look like the Christmas star. And that actually did happen. These two planets did were very, very close together in the night sky in 7 BC. And some people think that's actually when the Magi saw this and began their journey to find Jesus, the infant Jesus. And so we're talking about the biblical account of this in Matthew chapter 2. And one of the things that I said just before the break was that it was thought when Matthew was writing his gospel that stars were actually living beings. What? Well, there's a second century writer by the name of Tatian. And he's a little bit infamous for writing something called the Diatessaron. I'll get into that another time. But here's what Tatian said. He said he talked about, quote, a spirit in the stars, a spirit in angels, spirit in humans, spirit in animals. So, in other words, he thinks that there's a living spirit in stars. Philo, who you might know, was a great Jewish philosopher and interpreter. He lived a century before. He said this, the stars are living creatures. The stars are souls divine. The heavenly bodies, living creatures endowed with mind. Now, this sounds kind of crazy. And in fact, the church actually thought it was crazy too. And in fact, at the Second Council of Constantinople, it actually denounced this view that the sun, the moon, and the stars are living beings. And they actually said, this is heresy. You can't believe this. So that kind of put a kibosh, if you will, on anybody thinking that the star was in fact an angel in disguise. Because a lot of people did think that in the early days. Oh, it must have been an angel. But it wasn't. It was an actual star. If, you know, it wasn't an angel at all. So I just want to leave you with that for a sec. I'm going to go to the phones right now because Francine has been patiently waiting on hold. Francine calling from Chicago. Welcome to the show. How are you, Francine?
I'm fine, Cale. Thank you for taking my call. I want to mention that Jupiter is considered the planet of the higher mind and rulership, kingship, spiritual expansion. And Saturn is considered, it's sometimes called the parent. It sets limits and parameters and restrictions. In Aquarius is the sign of the collective of all humanity, and Aquarius pours forth the waters of knowledge. Falling on the solstice, this conjunction, which is when the light begins to increase, it sounds to me like the second coming is coming.
Hmm. Well, that's this sounds to me... Okay, first of all, I don't know if this is a harbinger of the second coming of Christ. Even Jesus says, I don't know what's going to happen. So I certainly don't, that's for sure. And so we don't know. I mean, he could come at any moment, of course. But a lot of what you're saying, Francine, sounds a little bit like astrology to me. And, you know, I think we need to be very, very careful because the New Age movement and a lot of what you're saying seems to be drawn from possibly New Age sources. I'm not sure where you're getting this from. But I really want to refer you to a Vatican document. You can look this up on the internet. It's about the New Age movement, and it's called The Bearer of the Water of Life. Now, it's interesting that you mention Aquarius because, you know, the astrological sign of Aquarius is the water bearer. And what this Vatican document talks about is that Jesus Christ is truly the bearer of the water of life. And so it really deals with that. So I would recommend that you read that. And I'm not saying that you buy into this, but I'm just saying... I'm not sure where you got this idea from, but you might want to check that out. The Bearer of the Water of Life. It's a Vatican document. I'm certainly not, it's not my area of expertise to deal with New Age issues, but I have read that and it is very instructive. It's been a few years since I read that, but I do recommend that you check that out, Francine. So, interesting call. Thank you very much for that. And just want to continue on really quickly with this because a lot of people, when it comes to the Magi, one of the things that they will say is that these guys are not historical, that Matthew is making it up. He's making up the story out of whole cloth. That is not true. In fact, there is plenty of historical precedent for situations like this, even outside of the Bible. In fact, there was a king of Armenia Tiridates, King Tiridates of Armenia, who actually traveled from quite a distance in the east to pay respects to Nero. Now, of course, Nero was the crazed emperor who probably set the city on fire in the 60s AD and blamed this on Christians, unleashed a massive wave of persecution against the church. This is when St. Peter and St. Paul were martyred at this time. And Nero, who had gone insane, saw himself as a living god, as all the Roman Caesars did. Now, Revelation, the book of Revelation, was written at this time too, leading up to the destruction of the Jerusalem temple in 70 AD, which to the Jews was like literally the end of the universe. And this is why it talks so much about the end of the world. There is the second coming of Christ. There will be an actual end of the space-time universe, a new heavens, a new earth. That's true too. But there's a lot in Revelation that has to do with the Jewish war with the Romans in 70 AD. So if you listen to our sister program, and you can download the podcast on relevantradio.com or on the Relevant Radio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, we're everywhere, you're going to want to check out the Faith Explained podcast and listen for what we had to say about Nero in the book of Revelation, because actually he is this Antichrist figure. There are many Antichrists in the world, as John says in one of his letters, but Nero Caesar, the letters of his name in Hebrew add up to 666, and that's why he is considered the Antichrist in the book. Jesus' name adds up to 888, which is amazing because 8 is really the number of perfection, because Jesus rose from the dead on the 8th day. On the 8th day. Think about it. If you look at Holy Week, if Palm Sunday is day 1, what's Easter Sunday? Day 8. On the 8th day, God really starts a new creation. You know, the first creation took place in Genesis in a 7-day period. I'm not saying it was 7 literal days, but it's a 7-day period. Well, guess what? In the New Testament, on the 8th day, Jesus rises from the dead, ushering in the last days, the age of the resurrection. Really, the age of the world to come is broken into the world. Well, speaking of Nero, back to Nero for a second, Tiridates, who was the king of Armenia, traveled very far from the east to pay respects to Caesar Nero in the year 60 AD. And here's what he said to him when he got there. He said, "I have come to you, my God, to pay homage." What? Well, again, the Caesars refer to themselves as living gods. They viewed Julius Caesar as a living god, and all the Caesars that came after him, Caesar Augustus, Nero Caesar, as sons of God, divine sons of God. Well, this is why, you know, when Mark writes his gospel to the Romans, he's writing to Rome, he says the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Now, we read that and we say, big deal, we've heard this a million times. That would have jumped off the page to his Roman readers. You know, Jesus is the Son of God? Hold on, I thought Nero was the Son of God. No, no, no. No, he's merely a pretender. And so there is precedence for magi or wise persons from the east traveling to pay homage to a king. Now, the magi don't necessarily realize that he's God. This Armenian king actually thought Nero was a living god. No, no, no. But the magi simply know that this king has been born and that this star is kind of a harbinger of that. So when Herod finds out all about this, you know, from the Magi, he is absolutely freaking out, and so is everybody else around him, because they knew what he was like. They knew about his murderous ways. In fact, Herod very famously not only killed his wife, I believe he killed his mother as well. You can fact check me on this, Patrick. I believe his mother-in-law, he killed 3 of his sons, and that actually prompted a very famous quip, a very funny quip, from Caesar Augustus about Nero. And he said this. He said, "It's safer to be Nero's pig than his son. I'd rather be Nero's pig than his son." Now, why did he say that? Well, first of all, Herod called himself the king of the Jews, even though he wasn't really Jewish. He allegedly kept to the kosher food laws, so he wouldn't eat pigs. He wouldn't touch a pig. He wouldn't kill a pig. But his sons, oh, they were fair game. He would kill them, no problem, at the drop of a hat, if they were displeasing to him. So it's actually a play on words in Greek. The word for pig Hus sounds like a lot for the word for sun, Rios. And I don't know if I'm really pronouncing that right, but it's a pun. It's a play on words. It's safer to be his pig than his son. That's what Caesar Augustus said about Nero. And that tells you all you need to know about him. So anyways, what they give him, when they come to find Jesus, he is sitting on the lap of his mother Mary. And this is why, by the way, this is why we call Mary the seat of wisdom. You might have heard that expression. Well, she kind of is his throne, like he's sitting on her lap. And it's fascinating that Matthew mentions this, because this is exactly, again, what happens with Solomon in the Old Testament. Who was at the right hand of Solomon? It was the queen mother, Bathsheba. Solomon had many, many wives, hundreds of concubines, but he could only have one queen, and that was the queen mother. He had too many wives, and that was displeasing to God. But Bathsheba, his mother, was the queen. And in fact, this is what Matthew's setting up for us. It's like a royal throne room. You know, when they get to this house where Jesus is, he is the Davidic king sitting next to the queen of heaven, Mary, who is the queen mother. And they give to him gifts that the son of David, the king of Israel, would have received in the past. And here's what it says in Psalm 72. It says, "May the kings of Tarshish and the islands render him tribute. May the kings of Sheba and Seba bring gifts. May all kings fall down before him. All nations give him service or pay him homage." Wow. The book of Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 60 says, "Nations shall come to your light, kings to the brightness of your dawn. The wealth of the nations shall come to you. A multitude of camels shall cover you." Wow, that sounds pretty smelly. You know, a multitude of camels covering you. But anyways, it's the point is, a lot of wealth is brought to you. "The young camels of Midian and Ephah, all those from Sheba will come. They shall bring," what? "Gold and frankincense, and shall proclaim the praise of the Lord." Isaiah 60. So that's where the gold and frankincense comes from. And so they do this, they acknowledge the Christ, and then they escape by another route, having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod. And of course, Herod, when he knows that the Magi have escaped and he can't find out where this child is, he goes to extreme measures and slaughters all the children 2 years of age and under in Bethlehem and in the vicinity. That's how bloodthirsty he was and how fearful he was of a potential rival king, another king of the Jews. Well, many people question the historicity of that event. We'll get into that in another episode. It's a little bit too much for today's chatter about this, but just, you know, in light of this appearance of the star that's going to happen this year, this conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn may have been the same phenomenon that the Magi saw back at the first Christmas around that time. Not so sure, but we do know this. It is definitely historical that the Christ was born. We're going to go to the phones right now. Marie is calling from Little Chute, Wisconsin. Marie, you're live on the program with me, Cale Clark. How are you?
I am fine, thank you. Let me take off the speaker.
Sure.
No, I'm on the regular phone.
Oh, sounds much better.
Okay. Okay. I found this book years ago, Divine Mysteries of the Most Holy Rosary, translated from the Spanish of Blessed Mary of Agreda of the Child Jesus.
Okay.
And this is my go-to for the Star of Bethlehem.
Hmm.
May I read from the book?
Is it a long quotation or is it?
No.
Okay. Okay.
About 8 lines.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. Let's hear it.
Okay. "The infant God, therefore, was brought forth from the virginal chamber, unencumbered by any corporeal or..." Got to take my glasses off. Sorry about that.
Okay.
The bifocals don't work so well anymore.
Yeah, I'm getting to that point, too. I can identify with that.
Thank you. So I'll go back a little bit. "Unencumbered by any corporeal or material substance foreign to himself. But he came forth glorious and transfigured for the divine and infinite wisdom decreed and ordained that the glory of his most holy soul should in his birth overflow and communicate itself to his body, participating in the gifts of glory in the same way as happened afterwards in his transfiguration on Mount Tabor in the presence of the apostles. Matthew 17, verse 2.
Hmm. So what she's saying is that when Jesus was born, he was sort of radiating like he did at the transfiguration. Is that the gist here, I'm guessing?
Right. It goes on for pages in a great deal of detail. But essentially, he transfigured himself through her body into the arms of the waiting angels who gave the infant Jesus back to Mary when she came out of her ecstasy.
Okay. Well, so this is sort of, a private revelation from the writings of Blessed Mary of Agreda. This is the first that I've heard of that. And I think that, you know, one thing that we all know, of course, Marie, is that these private, even if somebody is a blessed or even a canonized saint, if they've received a private revelation, this is not something that the Catholics must believe or have to believe in any way. It's a private revelation. We only have to believe public revelation about the faith. And by the way, a lot of people are surprised to know that even goes for approved apparitions, like the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is going to be happening tomorrow. I think it's approved by the Church for sure, but you don't have to actually believe that that happened to become a Catholic, which is interesting. But we only have to believe in public revelation that God gave to all people through Jesus and the Church. So is that how it happened? Thank you, by the way, Marie, for the call. Marie calling from Little Chute, Wisconsin. I really appreciate that call. That's interesting. I hadn't heard of that before. Did that happen? You know, was Jesus transfigured even at his birth, or did his birth happen in a very normal, quote unquote, way? And of course, he is anything but a normal child. He is the God-man. We do know this. We do know this. Matthew's gospel says there was a supernatural phenomena in the heavens that definitely drew these magi, got their attention, and drew them to the place where the Christ child was. They eventually found him. And they worshiped him there, as it says in Matthew chapter 2. And we must worship Christ as well. I remember World Youth Day in Cologne when Pope Benedict presided over it in Cologne, Germany. That was the theme of the World Youth Day that year. We have come to worship him. And if we don't do that, we've missed the point. All of these phenomena, all of these clues that God leaves us in history, in nature, point us towards him. And if we don't worship him, we've missed the point entirely. That's what we've got to do in our lives. We've got to worship him in spirit and in truth. And we'll do more of that, hopefully help you to do that on the Cale Clark Show. We'll be back after this really quick break. Stick with us. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to our last segment here on the Cale Clark Show for this week. It's been an incredible week. Yesterday was our 100th episode. It was a milestone. It was a lot of fun. So if you missed the podcast on that, you're definitely going to want to check that out. And just before the break, I referenced Our Lady of Guadalupe. Of course, her feast day is tomorrow. Patroness of the Americas. Very, very important feast day for the Church. And among people of a Latin American background, it's really the third biggest day in the year, you know, in the Church calendar for them. Of course, there's Easter, there's Christmas, and Our Lady of Guadalupe is probably number three. And because of the coronavirus pandemic, I was reading about this on the website for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. There's usually a big, big, deal made about this with thousands of people in the streets for this procession in honor of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And unfortunately, that's not going to happen, but it is going to happen in a virtual way. And it's going to happen at 8 o'clock p.m. Los Angeles time, led by Archbishop Gomez of Los Angeles. So you're definitely going to want to hop on the website for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles to check out where you can view that, because we know we have a lot of people listening in Los Angeles to us right now. And we did a big show on the Feast of Juan Diego. The reason why I'm not talking too much about Our Lady of Guadalupe today is because we already did cover that on the 9th, which was just a couple of days ago, of course, and that was the Feast of St. Juan Diego. So again, if you go through the podcast archives on relevantradio.com or through the app, check out that episode if you want to learn more about Our Lady of Guadalupe. I went into great detail about how she appeared to Juan Diego, the background there, the historical background of the Aztec peoples and their culture of human sacrifice, which is just horrific, that was happening at that time. And Mary completely turned that around with her appearance. Just as the church was being shattered across Europe because of the influence of Protestantism, well, in the New World, in the Americas, 8 million people, the missionaries had zero luck before Mary appeared, 8 million people converted to Catholicism over a 10-year period because of the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And it's interesting, too, that all four, we talked about before the break also, that as Catholics, we only have to believe what's called public revelation. And there are four teachings about Mary that you must believe to hold the Catholic faith. Her Immaculate Conception. We actually celebrated that this week too. It's been a huge Marian week on the 8th, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. So Immaculate Conception, again, go back to the podcast. We explained that doctrine in great detail that day. That was a lot of fun. Immaculate Conception, the fact that she's ever virgin, that she's the mother of God, and that she was assumed body and soul into the glories of heaven. Well, Guadalupe, interestingly, includes all four of those Marian dogmas, because Mary appeared in her body, which again shows us that she was assumed body and soul to the glories of heaven. She called herself, when she was speaking to Juan Diego and to his uncle, she called herself ever virgin and mother of God. And the name Guadalupe has two possible meanings. It can mean she who is without sin, right? There's the Immaculate Conception right there. And she who crushes the stone serpent, which was this pagan Aztec serpent god, kind of demonic. And in the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe on Juan Diego's Toma, of course, she's standing upon a dark crescent moon, which is the symbol of this Aztec serpent god. She's crushed this image of Satan in a sense. When she steps on this moon god, you know, it's a symbol of the Immaculate Conception. In Genesis 3:15, right? This is the first, the so-called first gospel, the proto-evangelium, when God says, I will put enmity between you, the serpent, and the woman. And that can't be Eve, because Eve is kind of already in league with Satan by you know, having fallen for his temptation and committed sin. Sin is now on the loose in the world and in Adam and Eve because of the choice that she and Adam made. So when God says, I put total enmity between you, the devil, and the woman, that has to be the new Eve, Mary, the sinless virgin. And her offspring would crush the head of the serpent. That happened when Jesus died on the cross and was resurrected, destroyed Satan and his power, although he's still, of course, on the loose. It's kind of the time between D-Day and VE Day. He knows his doom is sealed, but he's still trying to take down as many people with him as possible. And God said, you will strike at his heel. You will deal what seems to be a mortal blow to him, but he will crush your head. So Mary and Jesus team up in this takedown of Satan, if you will. And she confirms, by the way, another doctrine of the church, that she's our personal mother in the faith as well. It kind of reminds me of a funny story. When I came back into the Catholic Church, you know, one of the things that a lot of non-Catholic Christians will say to Catholics, and sometimes Catholics don't know how to respond to this, and they're trying to be helpful. They're trying to help you. They'll say, do you know Jesus Christ as your personal Savior? And we'll say, what? You know, we're not really used to talking like that. Do you know Jesus Christ? Well, I guess, you know. Well, if you're not sure, let me tell you. After I came back into the church, I went to a conference at the Franciscan University of Steubenville. And there was a lady there who had a funny t-shirt, and it said, do you know Mary as your personal mother? You know, that's kind of the Catholic response to that. Do you know Mary? Well, we should, of course, know Jesus as our personal Lord and Savior. Of course, we need to have a personal relationship with him. And when we receive the Eucharist, it doesn't get any more personal than that. We become united to him. You know, the flesh and blood, soul and divinity of Jesus Christ united to our own flesh and blood. Wow, we can't get any closer to God this side of heaven. But God also provided Mary for us as our mother in the faith too. His own mother becomes our mother. That's why, you know, when Jesus was on the cross, he said to John the Apostle at the foot of the cross, you know, son, here is your mother. Woman, here is your son. And again, he's not being disrespectful to his mother by calling her woman. She is that new Eve, the new woman, the woman of the new creation. Here is your mother. And this is exactly what Mary does at Guadalupe, because she says to Juan Diego, am I not here? Who am your mother? Don't be afraid of this disease. Again, you know, Juan Diego's uncle was quite ill. Don't be afraid of this illness or anything else. Am I not here? Who am your mother? And she is our mother as well. So I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day celebrating the feast tomorrow. We're going to go to the phones right now. Gabriel from Albuquerque is calling. Gabriel, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, Cale. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic, sir. Absolutely fantastic. What's on your mind?
Well, I had a comment on the last caller's call about Blessed Mary of Agreda and the private revelation and how it might tie into the book of Revelation about what you are talking about, the woman clothed with the stars and clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet. It goes on to talk about the child being born from her is snatched up by the angels, and she is then, the woman is then sent into the desert until...
Revelation chapter 12. Yeah, we talked about this a lot on our sister program, The Faith Explained, because we're going through, obviously, as you probably know, the book of Revelation. We recently did that chapter. Yeah, absolutely. So what's the tie-in here, Gabriel?
That revelation, that private revelation, has, you know, public revelation tied to it through the book of Revelation when Jesus was snatched up by the angels, that maybe that there's a tie in there. I don't know how to explain a little bit more. I'm sure you'd be able to help to clarify that a little bit more.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just not sure. I guess my answer is I'm not sure because I don't know about her writings, Blessed Maria of Agreda. I haven't read them myself. There are many, many, many private revelations out there, obviously. But again, even if it comes from a canonized saint, and I've said it before, I'll say it again. You know, the church says what we have to believe as Catholics is only what's contained in public revelation. In other words, you know, God certainly does speak to individuals for sure. Sometimes they're in what are called locutions. There have been many saints who have heard God almost speaking in an audible voice to them. Sometimes it's an interior voice. That's happened a lot throughout the centuries, but that's usually a message for that individual person. God wants to direct something specific in their life. So obviously, when it comes to God's will for us, there's his general will for all people, and that would be manifested in things like the Ten Commandments. They're not the Ten Suggestions, right? As Cardinal Collins likes to say, they're for everybody. But there is, of course, the specific will of God for each people. And sometimes, Gabriel, these private revelations help to, or these locutions that people get, they do direct that individual soul. But do they apply to everybody? It's not always the case. It's not always the case. But thank you very much for that call. That was Gabriel calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Well, I can't believe it. We've come to the end of another week on the Cale Clark Show. You're going to want to stick around. Timory's up next. But I want to take a moment just before we sign off and hand things off to her to thank my Top Gun team. Really want to thank Lucas Holt for producing the first 101 episodes now of the Cale Clark Show, with hopefully many more to come, God willing. Really want to thank Patrick Alog for screening the calls. And I want to thank Karen Moran for working social media and being such a great voice behind the scenes. And you will hear more from her on the Family Rosary Across America with Father Rocky later tonight. Take it away, Michaela. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to my dad.